This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 20. What is success? Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about how you define what success is. Is it more than just winning a game? Sometimes it is, and we talk a little bit more about that at the beginning of the show. Then we go on to answer a couple of questions. One about trigger moves and the swinging ball, and another one about maintaining your action. If you've got a good one, but you keep losing it, how do you get it back and keep it good? Find out on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you are, we don't distinguish here. All we do is we help you improve your game or help you to help others, if that's what you want to do. My name is David Hinchcliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you is, first of all, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very sun-kissed at the moment, actually. I've been out in Sardinia for the last few days doing some coaching and having a nice bit of holiday time with some good people. Yeah, it's been good so far.
Yep. Don't forget to slip, slap, slop.
Correct. Always, mate. Always. I've got it's actually even better now because you've got this spray stuff, haven't you? Oh, aerosol stuff, which is just absolutely brilliant. Makes it a lot easier. And my bald head is looking nicely tanned without being burnt.
Oh, fantastic. Don't get in your eyes. That's a mistake I've made in the past here.
Yeah, I get that.
Make some water. Yeah. Secondly, it's another man who I'm sure has been sunning himself recently as well. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Good morning, David. How are we doing?
Yeah, very good. You've been in the sun as well yourself, but not necessarily cricket related.
No, not cricket related. We'll skim over that one.
just a short break. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, short a rugby related break, I would have said, but it was it's happened. There you go.
It was a thing.
Okay. It was a thing that happened, and no one ever spoke of again.
Let's go on to the cricket then, shall we? And specifically, it was something that came up in a game that we had this weekend against a much weaker opposition who we beat, and we always looked like beating throughout the game, but it was a little bit closer than perhaps we would have hoped at the start of the game. We only won by about 14 runs, and there was a lot of talk afterwards about how the win should have been more comprehensive, and you know what is the minimum that we should have won by to count it as a success. And so I was thinking about that. I was thinking about, well, hang on a minute. How do you measure what a success is easily when you're talking about winning games? You know, is the win enough to say that was a success? Or are there other things at play there? And if people are getting down on themselves because they feel like they should have won more easily, does that make even a win a failure if you don't do the things that you wanted to do in the first place at the start of the game?
No, I think it's really important that you've got some things that you can attribute as being successful. Otherwise, you get into that same old conversation that it appears that happened at the weekend, mate, which is the bowlers versus the batters chat, which often isn't a particularly a good process to go down. And often you don't come out with it with anything that you can work on in the future either, because it just is one side against the other, really. And I've been in millions of those over the years, not so much in recent years, but certainly as a player, you know, every conversation about whether we won well or what didn't win well was all about, you know, bowlers saying that we didn't get enough runs and batters saying we're not getting enough opportunities to get wickets. So ultimately, I think it's really important that you have some sort of performance goals that you aim for, whether that be for the batters, you know, how many boundaries you hit or how many singles you create or how many stolen runs you create, which is something that I know Sam does and we do quite a lot of. And then down to the bowlers, trying to restrict the number of extras that people bowl, restrict the number of boundary balls that they bowl. How to finish, start and finish the over is a really good one. But having those little things that you can really focus on are crucial. when you're assessing the effectiveness of your team over the course of a game. Because I expect if you looked at it in those ways, or the team looked at it in those ways, you'd have probably picked out a few more successes from the game than you would have done previously, and maybe highlighted a couple of development areas for the following week.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about runs stolen, because I've been measuring that this year, and we've been doing pretty well on that score. And so it's nice to see that pay off. But then, of course, you get a bowler saying, well, we should have got at least 100 more runs there. And then you get the batsman saying, well, that's all well and good, but you know, you should have taken more wickets, should have bowled them out. Why did we let them get to the last over? Even if they needed 19 off it, why did we even let them get to the last over? And that's a difficult thing to discuss, isn't it? Even when you're presenting the information saying, well, look, you know, we stole 19 more runs than they did during the innings. And that was the difference between us. But then someone says, well, yeah, well, that's all well and good, but, you know, we should have scored even more than that. And that becomes an endless discussion then, doesn't it? And Lavers, how do you deal with those kind of discussions where people are saying we should... There's endless things where people say we should always have done better, no matter how well you do.
Yeah, you can spend your kind of days and weeks throughout a season just chasing the perfect game, can't you? And as most people will realise, that doesn't really matter how long you go on for, you'll probably never actually realise the perfect game in all the years you play. So all you've got to do is think, are we playing to a standard that we think is good enough? Now, with discussions, I think they're really, really valuable. And there can be a good environment for people to kind of praise as well as look for opportunities for others to improve. But I think it's key that we combine a bit of discussion, so there is a bit of an opportunity for opinion, because we don't want to make it a purely stats-based environment where everything is a number and everything is quite kind of manufactured in that it's clearly numbers that are ruling everything, although obviously they have an enormous impact on the game. But we want to have a balance between that and some discussion. I guess what we need to do is try and make sure that the discussion we have and the numbers we have are kind of consistent across a period of time. So we're trying to have the same discussions. We're trying to review the same things each week. And there might be the odd thing that will arise that we can comment on as you go along. But if we did win or we didn't win by however many runs, what are those discussion points we've had the last week, the last 6 weeks, the last 2 months, whatever it is, and how do we compare in those areas to where we were previously? Similarly, how do the numbers we've created compare to those areas we've had recently? And then is there any additional conversation we want to have on top? And it's a little bit of continuity in those discussions makes them probably a little bit more civilised. And I think you can quite easily get into an uncivilised conversation in a change room, can't you? Which I'm sure we've all been in, where it is a little bit of pointing the finger. But again, if it's coming back to a point of reference, which is a previous week or a series of previous weeks, then hopefully it makes them a little bit more specific rather than just a row between two groups of skill sets.
It does become, doesn't it, a situation where someone is decided that something is wrong, but when you question them on, okay, well, what can we do differently, then often there isn't a very specific answer. And what it turns out is that person might not have something specific in mind. All they think is we could have done better than that. But from a coaching point of view, and from a playing point of view as well, is you don't want to just say, oh, well, let's try a bit harder next time. You need something a bit more tangible than that, don't you? You know, whether that's some kind of a tactical change, whether that's something to work on in the training sessions between the games, or whether that's something specific and tangible that you can work on. That gives you something to do. Whereas if you are saying we should just do better, we should just try harder, it's very hard to do that, isn't it? It's very difficult to put that into action just by saying it.
I think on that bit, the trying hard a bit, a lot of people would say they try pretty hard. So trying hard is not necessarily a great answer, but working a bit smarter may be a better answer, and reviewing a bit smarter. I think a lot of people are very quick to put a review to bed just because it becomes slightly frustrating or annoying, or it's looking back at something that maybe hasn't been perfect, and people don't always want to reflect on things that weren't great. However, in terms of moving forwards and progressing and getting better and being better prepared and equipped to play the following week, then that review process is vital. And without it, as you said, you'll have no specific or no focus as to how you're going to be better, and you're not going to be stuck in the same conversation, the same changing room 7 days later.
I think it's really important, David, that those guys that identify things like, we should have got 100 runs more, that they do have a solution in there. And again, I suppose it's the terms of engagement within a conversation are really important. And, you know, for me, unless you've got a solution that you can put forward, then don't make the ruck. Or if you want to set up your team, because we know that some people are ruckers and other people are solution-based people, because that's just the way it is, that we actually say, okay, we know that you're going to come out with something that you want to change, but you don't know how. Your role is to come up with the hows, you know, and you can work it in that way as well. And if you work out who your pairings are, your ruckers and your tighteners are, then you can probably get through that conversation with a little bit more a positive outcome or some working areas that you can go into the next week's practice ahead of the game the following Saturday.
The other thing, going back to that, we were talking about how numbers, you know, the role of numbers and the role of performance indicators or whatever you want to call it. I recall a conversation I heard about baseball once where you get people who are stats guys, and they're interested in the numbers and they're interested in quantifying things, and they sometimes fall in the trap of over quantifying things. And then you get other guys who are not as interested in numbers. They're more interested in the story, the narrative of what happens as it unfurls. And those guys that probably underestimate the power of numbers. So if you can find a happy medium between those, if you're a stories guy, don't be afraid of the numbers. And if you're a numbers guy, don't be afraid of the story, because both of those are powerful ways to achieve the success that you want to achieve.
Yeah, they're both valid, that is for sure. And you know, you're talking about experience, you're talking about objective numbers, aren't you? And often the marrying of the two, which is a really delicate thing to achieve. But over time, with practice, I think teams get better and better at taking good information out of numbers, but also not forgetting that valuable experience that everybody has had going through that game. But numbers are good. I have to say, numbers are good, but they aren't the be-all and end-all of everything.
Exactly. When you become over-reliant on them, that can be a problem. Just as if you become under-reliant on them, I think, you know, winning games of cricket is at the end of the day about numbers, isn't it? You know, so you know, there's no way around that. Even if you don't believe in any stats, nobody might believe in any stats, but they all look at their batting average.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there is a game for numbers, then we're in it, eh?
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the next section, the yes/no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, stats are motivating.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, it's better to dodge training than to train indoors during the season.
No.
No.
Third question, the main differential between those that don't succeed and those that do is the work that individuals do themselves.
Yes.
Not surprisingly, yes.
Are you sure about that one, Gareth? Because you know there was there's that guy on Twitter, wasn't there?
Well, very good to hear from him.
It was, yeah. Now it's about time for a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website. How that works is questions get sent into us usually via email from coach@pitchvision.com. Although there are some other ways, we'll get back to that later. And then we do our best to answer those questions, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Manik has sent in a question, and Manik says, "Hello, I'm a district-level cricketer in India. In recent times, I have some problems regarding my stance against swinging balls. I started using a trigger move as it proved helpful for me. But the problem that happens is that I move my feet across rather than backwards, and that makes my shoulder too open, and then the stance is too open. When the stance is open, I feel it's difficult to play against balls doing something in the air. Another problem I face is that I'm unable to play check drives, and I've got to play full drives only. So please help me. How do I get better balance after my trigger move so that my stance is not too wide or open and allows me to play better? So mainly stance here, but you know, if we want to throw something in about that drive thing as well, that'd be great. But yeah, let's start with his stance and his trigger move.
Yeah, it sounds to me as if you're moving your back foot back and across and the front one's not going with it. And for people that want to go back and across, often there needs to be a readjustment of the front foot, i.e. a second movement. So you look at somebody like a Michael Vaughan at the top of his career and moving back and across, but also readjusting the front foot to get that same alignment post-trigger as you had pre-trigger. It's just that it's had a bit of motion and a bit of movement in there, which gets the neuromuscular system going. Somebody who does that at this present moment in time who's very, very good at it is AB de Villiers. Another one is Steve Smith, who all use that back and across method, but actually also move the front foot. So the alignment of the shoulders in particular stay in that alignment that they started with before the trigger movement came into play, puts them in a really good position to be able to drive down through the ball, to have the bat swing coming in a place where they feel very comfortable with it and they know exactly where it is at all times. So that's the first thing that I'd do is as well as incorporating a back and across, if you want to have movement before the ball's bowled, then you bring that front foot across and it will maintain that alignment that you started with before you made that initial movement. So that would be my starting point. Going on to full flow cover drives, to me, if you're somebody who does that, you're somebody who does that. And you know, and other people are more check drivey. So myself as a batter, I was a check driver rather than the full flower. I would only really full flow if the ball was incredibly wide and I would throw my hands through it. But you know, I've got images of me hitting the ball over the top for six, and actually my follow through was very, very limited, yet the ball still went quite a long way. And we've just discussed it before on the show, but often the people who swing a long way back with their hands, and in my case, and a much better player than me obviously, but Brian Lara's case, their hands would go quite high, often they would check drive rather than having a full follow through. And the guys with slightly slower and lower bat swings on the way back would actually end up having more follow through in front of them, and a Kevin Peterson would be a classic example of somebody like that that had a very full flourish finish as opposed to a check drive. Now, many of these players do both depending on situations and they adapt accordingly, but as a general rule, you're either somebody who swings back a long way and therefore follow through in a check drive fashion, or you're somebody who swings back a shorter way and has a follow through that is exactly what you're describing to us in your batting.
And on that drive point, Lavers, I guess it doesn't really matter which one you're doing, as long as you are, as the bat arrives at the ball at the right moment, so the bat's at the right angle and it's travelling at a decent speed, then you're gonna hit the ball along the ground and with a good contact. And the follow through, it becomes preference rather than, unless there's a problem further back, is what I'm saying. It doesn't really matter what happens after you've hit the ball.
Yeah, that's one of the key kind of things I picked out from Manak's question, was he describes it as a problem, but I'm not sure where the problem is really. If every drive I played was a full drive and I was hitting in the middle of the bat, I'd be really happy with myself. So I guess the question is why do you feel it's a problem? Do you feel like you maybe don't have as much control as you would like? And ultimately, that's not necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily say the plan is to move away from something that you do naturally because it looks like it might be more controlled. I would say it's go the other way and really work hard on hitting those full drives and really work hard on something that does naturally suit you, but maybe isn't quite to the standard that you would like it to be. So don't feel like you need to add a new shot to your game. Just kind of think more about making the shot that you do have a little bit better and a little bit more consistent, just by thinking about what does potentially go wrong with it, if there is an issue. So is it a slight timing issue? Is it a slight positioning issue where maybe you're not close enough to the ball as you would want to be, or you're not watching the ball as well as you want to be? So there are a number of different issues it could be, but I would say stick with it and try and maximise that shot you've got, which it probably is a strength for you, even if you're not 100% happy with how you're executing it at the moment.
Yeah, to me it comes back to his contact points. So if he's got a full follow through or a check drive and his contact point is too early, then obviously there's something to work on. But rather than try to go to check drives when you're a natural full swing of a ball, just try and play the ball a little bit later. Let it come up to you. Trust that ball coming into your vision and hit it accordingly.
It's kind of you can either tinker with something, can't you? Or you can completely relearn something. And so that slight tinkering adjustment sounds like a much easier process to me and probably a better one.
I guess it comes back to if you are doing a check drive, then you know it looks like you're more in control. It looks like you don't get accused of the bottom hand coming in too early, which is a common accusation that you get people who play check drives, especially if the ball's going in the air. But actually, those things aren't tied to the full follow through drive, are they? They're just they're things that happen almost separate from it.
No, that's right. Absolutely.
And ladies, did you have anything else to say about the stance?
Not really. I would completely agree. It sounds like it's a bit of an alignment issue where you're setting up in a great position, you're triggering across with one foot, as Gareth has said, and you're putting yourself in a slightly different position. So, without knowing a little bit more about the problems you're having, it sounds like it's probably a case of the backswing slash downswing not necessarily coming through the ball as straight as we would have liked, and that's probably a result of the trigger movement you've got. Again, reading the question, it sounds like a recent thing, so the introduction of this trigger is quite new. So it may be that you haven't always had it. It may be that it's still at a stage which is quite fresh and can be quite easily retrained or relearned. So, think about what you want to get from the trigger. Obviously, the movement sounds like something you like because you said it's helped you. But the improvement that's given you in terms of the timing of your movement and maybe your feel is maybe sacrificing a little bit of that alignment of your base and subsequently hip shoulders and then backswing, downswing, etc.
Yeah, and of course, it might not be technical at all. It might be, he just came up against a very good away swing bowler one day who was causing him a lot of trouble and it made him feel uncomfortable. And then someone said, it's because you've got that open stance. No wonder you can't get over there. And it's just put that little doubt in the mind. And it might be nothing to do with that part of the technique at all. So, it's difficult to judge purely from self-reporting, isn't it? But certainly there's other things that could be at play there. Next question's from Sada. And Sada says, I'm a right-hand fast bowler and I'm 19 years old. I have a problem that I can't bowl with the same bowling action for long. One of my bowling actions is perfect, but I can't maintain it for more than 2 or 3 days. And after that, I suddenly bend towards the left and lose pace and feel pain in my back. Please, can you suggest me some ways to maintain the same bowling action? Slightly unusual here in that most people who report this kind of a problem are doing it all the time. But he says he can correct himself, but not for long. Ever seen that before?
Well, it sounds like, first of all, he's got something that he really likes, which is good. I think a lot of people are striving to find what they want to do in terms of bowling actions, and they're always adjusting and always looking for improvements. But it sounds like Sada's got something that he thinks is really good, and maintaining it isn't easy for him. Be interesting to see how long he's had that bowling action for and what he's done to develop it. He's 19, so he's probably coming towards the end of his growth, but he might still be growing a little bit, and subsequently he may not be physically in the condition that he would like to be in. So it might be that physically there's a little bit of strength work we can do to try and make sure that he can be repeatable for longer. He said, though, that he can't maintain it for more than two to three days. Well, or he can maintain it for... No, he cannot maintain it for more than 2 to 3 days. Potentially there it comes down to a little bit of scheduling and working out how much bowling you're actually doing. Are you bowling 8, 10, 12 overs in a day? And if you're doing that for 3, 4, 5 days a week, maybe just by taking a little bit of foot off the gas in terms of the volume and the workload, the extra strength work that's required to put in to make you last a bit longer maybe isn't actually needed because you're just overdoing it and putting your body through a little bit more than it needs to. Obviously, that'll depend on what your kind of timetable is for training sessions and matches and things. But if you speak to your coach about it and explain the situation, I'm sure if you say I can offer 2 days in a row where I can bowl really well, but then I need a day off, he'd probably bite your hand off and say, I'll take that. Let's just try and plan it a little bit better.
Yeah, I think Sam's absolutely nailed it there, to be honest. It's about workload first and foremost. And, you know, in the UK, we deal with the 7-4-2, so 7-day period, bowling no more than four times and no more than 2 days on the trot. And it appears that you're going beyond that. And as a consequence of that, your action breaks down because of fatigue, because of a lack of recovery, and probably a lack of strength as well. But I think if you manage that workload first and foremost, then it will be interesting to see whether you are able to sustain that perfect action that you've talked about there. So that would be my starting point. And then the other thing really is to look around the strength, in particular in the legs and in the core. I don't think you can ever do overly too much on that, particularly in what seems like quite a heavy bowling schedule. Just breaking it up a little bit, doing some good recovery work, doing a little bit of training at an appropriate time in the week, and you'll find that you'll be able to maintain that action for 2 days on the trot. It's really difficult for bowlers to go 3 and 4 days and then not to be a negative effect on their bowling actions and certainly on their bodies. So it's just workload predominantly. If you can add some good leg work and core work, which we've talked about heaps on the show in the past and shown in numerous articles that are on the website, then I think you're going to be attacking it from two really good angles. Soapbox time here on the show, and we've got David with, I think, a typically Scottish story.
It certainly is a Scottish story because I'm talking about rain. We had a long rain delay in a game recently. The match was reduced to 30 overs and it started nearly 4 hours late. And that's a long time for cricketers to be sitting around, not warming up, not doing very much, getting depressed about the state of the pitch. And generally losing a lot of energy. And I think energy is a very important thing when you talk about rain delays or any kind of delay. You can easily have your excitement drop out of you in any kind of delay. And it's important to manage your energy and manage your emotional state during that. And if you feel a little bit down, try and find the time to push yourself back up again. And maybe that means you have a bit of a longer warm-up and you do things a little bit more intensely, or you do some things, some running around and some exciting things that you wouldn't normally do. But if you keep yourself up for the game, then when it restarts, then you'll be in a much better position than the opposition, who've probably been sitting around and moping and getting depressed about all the bad weather. And that is the end of the show for another week. Just before we go, we're going to do all the normal housekeeping. The first part of that is to decide on the winner of this week's competition. And it was two questions, one from Manak about his trigger movement and his check drives or his full follow-through drives, and one from Sada about having a bowling action which he liked but not being able to maintain it. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Sardar's one because I think the advice that we've given him hopefully will make a change straight away by just adjusting that workload. So great other question about trigger movements, but this week Sardar's a winner.
Congratulations to you. And you can also send in your own question to us. Well, if it gets on the show, we'll definitely answer it. And there is a good chance that you will also win that prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, if someone was thinking they wanted to do that, how could they send in their question?
They can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. There is also social media available, as is the modern way. Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy and Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can also listen to the show every week. It's free. It comes out on Fridays. And the way you do that is go into your favourite podcast app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And then tap on that subscribe button to get the show delivered to you every week, rain or shine. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.